Blog Talk Radio.
Found each other again. Welcome, Masonic Effects. A new chapter in the never-ending tale. Lovely, lovely. I'm struck by where I am in North America, and let me first extend my greetings to the world out there, listeners, Brazil and New Zealand and Ireland and Latvia and Russia. I'm curious that you. Not that there's brethren there, but that you're connecting. I love that. And China. And I hope it's an inquiry for you're looking for, you know, whether we're offering something that might be of use to you. I thought, certainly hope we are. It's a language of lingua franca. Eh? In North America and in Europe, And Pakistan, Africa, my goodness, we have a lot of people tuning in. And Oman, very, very interesting, very eclectic group you are. I've been noticing, maybe I'm influenced, of course, I think I am. I think I've confessed previously that I have to avoid certain situations because I get influenced by them. I try to avoid the big political gatherings of the craft. I'm talking about the craft now. I try because the influence me and I want to, and I feel that draw to just be part of it, you know, just to add another voice to the cacophony and where the madding crowd is, as the author would tell us. And I notice that it gives me a sense that doesn't really fit with my presence in masonry or with my general personality. I think I'm not built to absorb so much negativity and to be around other people who maybe for whatever the valid reasons are caught up in their own those magical moments that don't make much sense in the bigger scheme of things, you know, pressing a point, perhaps not realizing that we are a consensus. We are consensus builders. We're built, our entire lodges are built that way. And realizing it's not that hard to be pleasant with, you know, to be able to enhance what a brother does, but you need to be, you know, gratefully so. You need to be mindful. We all do. What I'm talking about is the tendency to best our brethren, and I think it's interesting because I don't think it really works well in the craft. The craft, I think, has a dignity about it that has a refined way of disagreeing, polite, always polite, because we need that. Because one day it will be us on the receiving end of all of this, the attention. It happens. So there's never a serious question about what. Although that's one of the first things that we find the entered apprentices will maybe clamoring for. What, you know, where do I fit in, and how does all of this work? Well, it's sort of like, in a way, for me, the first time you stand on the deck of a sailboat and you're with people that know every part in every situation has a label, so you know it has a term, so you know exactly what it means and where, what and where, fast. But when you're new, you know the front pointy end is up there and the blunt end is back there, and you've got this big stick in the middle with a bit of rag attached to it, hey? It's like that in a way. So what we normally would do is help the new brother to find a place to observe. I give him some tasks that are within his capacity, and allow him to perch in a way and observe what's going on, and let him know that we're receptive to his questions. And let him know that this is how a great deal of material information has been passed down. But how often do we do that without necessarily talking about an attitude that we strive for, and this funny sense that we need to offer these injections without expecting anybody else to reciprocate. We don't do it because of what other people have done. We do it from some drive within ourselves that we are looking for that experience, that vibe, where you can conquer the rules. You know, when somebody does something that's a bit contrary, or deliberate to offend, when you're talking about some of the thoughtlessness that goes on, to be able to restrain yourself, to be able to examine, not necessarily restrain, but examine your own reaction as it's happening, to be able to examine the thoughtlessness of some other comment as it's coming in, and not be shocked. Because it's not the first time you've seen this before, so it's not like, oh my goodness, this is a whole new experience. But to be examining our typical reaction. Our typical reaction is to what? To feel wounded, to treat these comments as a matter of pride. When we're with somebody that has been is fresh out of the profane world or is clueless, then they're going to be trying to best you at every angle. Maybe, you know, some directly or indirectly, you know the type. You've been around. There's a distinct difference when you're around a brother who has that presence that is enhancing the conversation, is enhancing your ideas. It's wonderful. That is the maturity that has moved masonry along for a long, long, long time. And it's not that you have to experience this in a lodge, feeling that you cannot, and we do. We cannot make eye contact when we're talking about these or thinking about these kind of things. Easier easier to sort of assimilate the edginess or the bad behavior of some old guy. And it really to ignore him and just dismiss him. He's an old and he's daft, and therefore, you know, we expect him to sound old and daft. That ain't right. That ain't right. Brother deserves to, our acknowledgement. So some of these, but do we always want to be dealing with somebody's distress in a lodge? Hell no. Hell no. It's like that. The lodge is where where the atmosphere is alive, where it's curious, where you're going to be rewarded for speculating. We are, after all, speculative Masons. No? But how we do it, we don't need to. It's like, have you ever tried to teach, you know, you're dealing with the insouciance of that 14-year-old little girl. She owns the world, and you can rant at her, you can try and insult her. You've seen the teachers, you know how stellar they are. Not every single last one, but you know the reputation that I'm talking about. They've earned it. She's irretractable. She knows that, you know, where real control lies. You can make her afraid. You can threaten her. You can harm her. But you can't control her. Insouciance. Well, that happens. You call it, you know, somebody being passive-aggressive or clever by far. I just don't have time for that anymore, and I suspect you don't. Nice Americano on the go here. It's more than that. We are looking to be for that enhancing experience. And one of the nicest ways to do it is to, if you want to improve your attitude and your thinking, be around good men, be around intelligent men, be around intelligent. And I use that term, I'm referring to gender only because of our contract with our Grand Lodge. The intellect is not gender specific. My goodness. Oh. But it's and it's not a burden. It's part of the framework. And I've elected, like you, to work inside that framework because it has so many advantages. And where it's restrictive, then I deal with that. It's like if you're asking your question now, the big question around floating through my head is, what in the hell is going on with infinite universe? This James Webb telescope showing us the galaxies that ought not to be where they are when they are. What am I to make of that? Well, I can't sit there and just be like echolalia, just anything that comes out of my mouth. You're expecting a logic and a fact and a more familiar way of inquiry so that we can exchange ideas. So you see, there's limits on everything. We just become familiar. We don't, every single time you open your mouth, you want to argue that this conversation needs to be held in French because it can be better articulated. Well, every single time, how much frustration can any one person handle? If you feel that way, then you learn French. You learn to, like, if you're like me, you stumble through some French literature and then you feel nobody's watching, so nobody knows how bad my French is. But those are private indulgences. You come into the craft, and you find it's not an indulgence. It's the atmosphere. It's the culture that we're teaching you. You know, anybody that you've been around a college or university primarily, you know that a big part of the learning, it's not like, oh, well, we're only paying you to go and sit in the classroom. Well, get over yourself. The experience has always being about maturing. You absorb the atmosphere. So where do you do that? With your mates, where you hear the walk past tables of people that look like you and sound like you, arguing about points that are familiar to you and your friends. And 10 years later, if you've been that, you go back to your alma mater, and you find the same kind of conversations going on at the pub at night. The same. And it, with the same kind of leaning in intensity and earnestness, it's absolutely cracking. Just cracking. It's wonderful. Our lodges are full of those types of experiences. Full of them. Only our sense of the cohort also needs to be defined, because apparently this notion of masonry is a little too vague. It's a little too vague. What is it? Well, it's a little too vague. We don't all have the mentor that will hold take you by the shoulder and say, "Sir, you know, if you want to learn about, you want to broaden your sense of the context so you make sense of what the aim and purpose of all this is, let's talk about the literature that you've been reading. Or these days, listen to an audiobook." And I would like, listeners, I would love for you to be sending me in the literature that contain those secrets, those insights that expand on character, expand on the depth of thinking. For me, I was thinking this of preparing for the show, and I thought, well, two for me would be Herman Melville's Moby Dick and Tolstoy's War and Peace. And are there more? Well, geez, I would hope. My goodness. But those are I find, outstanding. And am I, you know, it's like there's nothing in this that says you ought to. If you want to achieve the end results, or you want to have aim and purpose and have an understanding of self, there's so many paths to that and paths that I couldn't even begin to recognize. Well, I do recognize is I don't even know if it's a result, but of the state of mind when I'm talking with somebody that has insight and emotional and intellectual integrity. You notice it when it happens, whether it's a small child, you know, the 8-year-old piano prodigy, or the 90-year-old mate. It's pretty amazing. Now, here's a question I'll put to you. If you're like me and you bounce around and you think, my goodness, I would like to, you know, I do have my heroes. I would like to be able to have the calmness and the conversational attitude of Noam Chomsky. I would love that. You say, you know, these are things, these are facts, and they tell us things about ourselves that we don't necessarily want to know, but they are true. I like that. I like the courage. But it's not like listening to him and his thinking is something that I can parrot. Well, you know, if you listen to him, how do you do that? And tell me, but is it the Czech intellectual? Is it Pavel? You know, you don't emulate, you're influenced. It's like the opening of your mind or your, a different way of thinking, or a way of thinking that's not always popular with true, you know, in that truth to power kind of conversation, to relax. But to do it, I don't think anybody can do this with a frown. I don't think it'd be a good Mason with a frown. I'm sorry. There's me, eh? With a frown. I think you're missing some of the beautiful, beautiful experiences. It's a good time. It's a good time. I wonder, sometimes I see the, you know, big cities and, you know, bigger than here and more in-depth cultures. Our culture is still, it's still nascent, and we're still And like you, everybody, you know, we're finally dealing with the transgressions of our past, and we are putting an ethical footprint on, a fingerprint on things. And the politics is lagging behind, as always, you know, well, we're in charge and we have all the power, blah, 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 until the people rise up and do what the groups of people have always done, good or bad or ugly. The way we move forward, that is to make sure the culture is significant. And you may think, oh, what a toad that fella is. But years later, you may think, you know, he made sense. And look what he did. It's all about the potential. What we're doing right now is I don't think myself that it's an end in itself. It's a means to an end. And if masonry is a means to an end, what's the end? What's the end? And is it one end? Well, no, I don't think so. To be able to, I, and this is how horrible I am, to be able to sit in a, because you are all far better, far nicer human beings than me, to be able to sit at the edge of a lake on a sunset and just contemplate life as the sun, as the light fades from the day and then the twilight happens and then the stars come up. That for me, that's what I call, at my age, it's what I call magic. It's like the smell of a campfire, the crack of twigs and leaves under my feet when I'm walking through the forest, or the softness when you're walking on moss. The experience that, you know, that frisson that you experience with some music. And the detail, you know, we're leaning into a poem. And we walk away, and most of my European and British friends have this built in. Not so much here in where I am in North America and Canada, where they can pop out, just blurt out a line of poetry to fit an occasion. The grace and elegance, I don't know. They could have had coal dust under their fingernails when they learned it, but it just seems so beautiful and graceful. But listening, as we do, when we learn to listen, we lean in and we pay attention. We can't listen and talk at the same time, can we? So are we talking, you know, and then when you think about it, are we talking just to try and, you know, hear ourselves, give ourselves an affirmation? I'm intelligent because I say so, or I have something to contribute because I'm saying it. I'm sorry, that's a bit childish of me, but that atmosphere it's, you know, the point we're going to absorb information, but we have to talk about it. We ought to talk about it. Binary world, no need, eh? They're black, white, there. But even in the symbols, the yin yang, you see those little dots, eh? Fate. Everything is contained and in harmony. Plus the presence of the fates, the confusion, the state of the unexpected. Well, is there anybody out there that doesn't expect the unexpected? It happens. And I love that we can ascribe all kinds of belief patterns around it to explain it, because, you know, when you think, well, you're saying to, you know, life happens, seems kind of bleak in a way. I want something a little more romantic. I was meant to be this way. And he's in a better place. And it is what it is. But when you're, I don't know. What's it saying about me that it's, you know, there's so much around the world that this seems to be, it is what it is. And now, I don't know if I would have said that 20 or 30 years ago. Yeah, probably would. But not with the same joy, the same lack of, difficult. They wouldn't wrestle with it. So the culture, I want you to sit back today and let me know, are we raising an eyebrow here? Are we sharing a laugh? Are we looking at something that's so intense that we have to, you know, and it's so exquisitely demanding that we have to laugh about it? It's like, what else do you do? You suck it up, take a deep breath, and go at it tomorrow. And when you get up to the edges, you embrace it. Everything, there's limits to everything. But are they transitory? I don't know. Good program today, I think. I just think. Here, I'm going to start with, if you don't mind, with a favorite of mine. This is Count Basie. And he's lovely, lovely, always very charming man when you see him. When I see the jazz performers, the American jazz performers, and I'm terribly aware of what they went through during the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, what they had to endure, and the beauty that they gave in exchange. Here it is. This is a charming little tune, Little Darling. Huh. You know, it's funny. These days, we live in times where our news can be curated by an algorithm, or music. It can be. It's as if somebody. It is somebody else anticipating what will intrigue us, catch our attention, and they'll hold our attention for given amounts of time. And some of it is more controversial. Some of these things are more controversial because they do something with short-term memory. We know that. It's like anything else. So you repeat it over and over again, and it's going to have some effect. And we hope that effect will be wanted and understood. Here, you listen to what I think would make us feel comfortable if we're sitting in, a room where we can talk. And I would think we'd have a fire at one end and place would be busy. But we'd have a comfortable seat underneath us and a glass of something that we can toast each other with. And relax and sigh and catch our breath. Here, the commentary today. Signing in. Let me share this with you. Such a fool might have something useful to contribute. We might never know all the answers to the secrets of life. Yet we never seem capable of stopping. Since the Enlightenment, our collective intellect has had foot on the accelerator. The restraints were cut away and questions exploded with such force, the pursuit itself became part of our culture. The need to acquire information, an ability to process it, and now the tools to retrieve archived works. It was inevitable we would build machines to echo the new. Except for our habit of value judgment limits, telling us new is always better, it is still left to us to keep context in mind, just as brethren have done for centuries. Millennia. We bring a healthy sense of doubt with us. We know nothing remains the same. Everything is in motion. The only thing that limits us is accepting the idea understanding stops. What this conjures up is a sense that all questions have answers. that I do not know for a fact. Determinists would disagree with my free will, but my free will allows me to make mistakes, as my mistakes. As much as we try to be consistent, the fates are always involved. Today, 2023, 6023 Anno Lumineum, I sit with the rest of the world stunned by the images of galaxies from a time that ought not to exist, but they do. When physicists wonder out loud about an infinite universe or alpha or omega, what is a simple man to think? The world continues more mystery than known fact. But this simple man has a sense of values. He approximates a life influenced by principles he understands. Each day he puts one piece in the puzzle. Each day his understanding shifts ever so slightly, and so the life of an observer continues, knowing less and less each day. And as he becomes more aware of the unknowables, such a fool might have something useful to contribute. We will only know if we chance by and listen. Funny that. Oh, beautiful. That's Keith Jarrett. Yeah, that Keith Jarrett. I have him on a lot, don't I? Yeah. Here, are you sitting back comfortably? I hope you're relaxed and you can put, just for a moment, you can, perhaps the sounds here or the content helps you to meditate, just a little bit of focus, relax. Experience that inner landscape just for a second. Why the poetry? Poetry is made to be shared in a sensitive way. I think that's legitimate to say that brethren of the craft want to and aim to develop a sensitivity toward each other. That is how it shapes the human being, body and soul. If poetry can draw us into a deeper appreciation for the beauty and endless possibility lying dormant within the great architect's creation. It's like poets listened for the human spirit and began humming it. That's an idea, a notion that comes from an article from the University of Arizona. What speaks to crisis? The poetry of the soul. It's absolutely gorgeous. A strong human spirit is essential for an imaginative journey. I think I'd have to agree with that. The work, Astrophil and Stella, the poem today. This is by a writer, And Elizabethan writer, 16th century. He was born 1554. We don't tend to meander this far back, but this guy. Well, I do listen. You know, you hear Shakespearean sonnets here on the program, partly because I'm fascinated by the sonnet style. And this fellow, passed away in 1586, a long time ago. But he was here. This is how you want to be described in your epitaph: courtier, statesman, soldier, poet, and patron of scholars and poets, considered the ideal gentleman of his day. We're going to put that on your tombstone, my brother. Isn't that just absolutely lovely? You know how that allowance that we give to poetry and poets. He introduced critical ideas of the Renaissance theorists to England. Oh, interesting fellow. If you want to read more about this fellow, I would suggest you go to Britannica.com. And type in Sir Philip Sidney, S-I-D-N-E-Y. Interesting article. And you'll learn more about his court appointments. And then he succeeded his father as the cup bearer to the queen. It was a ceremonial position. Lovely. Interesting guy. Interesting. And I won't get into it, but it's tempting. He was admitted to the Order of the Garter. Well, of course, you would be, wouldn't you? Hmm? But he was given that honor, but he couldn't attend. He was unable to attend. And he married Frances, the daughter of Queen Elizabeth, Secretary of State. Good, connected guy. He was in the frame, wasn't he? Always in the frame. Now, the poem that I've selected today is Astrophel and Stella. And I just think this is stunning because it speaks to one of my, you know, a real crowd favorite, unrequited love. So we're really not sure. It happened so long ago. We're not really sure when, you know, we know approximately, you know, the exact day and everything else. But this was one of 108 sonnets and 11 songs that he wrote. We don't know the inspiration, but it's believed that this whole sequence is largely autobiographical and inspired by his relationship with a certain Penelope Devereaux, who's represented in this sequence by Stella. Astrophel, lover of the stars, and Stella, the star. Hmm? Star lover and star. So as you tuck into this, it can be categorized as an English sonnet, okay? And it's got the A-B-A-B, if you're prone to understanding that kind of thing. There was a craze in the Elizabethan times for sonnets. You know, why sonnets? Well, it was novel and people were tucking into it. In this, I want you to see, is he successful? He's trying, it's said, he's expressing what he hopes his pity will win over his desired lover, Stella, and he is attempting to convey a love for her in verse. So this poem touches on the theme of the value of poetry, and Shakespeare and Spenser did it as well. But in the first stanza, Astrophel is saying that is writing poetry to get Stella's attention and asking her to read the poetry that she might understand how deeply he feels for her. There is nothing more appealing to attract a woman than a pity party. Yeah? Nothing. I can't see why he wouldn't be successful. What are you thinking? Here. See if he is successful. My goodness. And then we can get into this, get into the detail later. Better over a bottle of a nice bottle of wine, a red, please. Something, well, I'm partial to something from Spain right now. Loving in truth and fain in verse, my love to show. that the deer, she might take some pleasure of my pain. Pleasure might cause her reading might take her no. Knowledge might pity win, and pity grace obtain. I thought fit words to paint the blackest face of woe, studying inventions fine, her wits to entertain. Turning others' leaves to see if thence would flow some fresh and fruitful showers upon my sunburned brain. The words came halting forth, wanting invention's stay. Invention, nature's child, fled stepdame studies blows, and others' feet still seemed by strangers in my way. Thus great with child to speak and helpless in my throes. Biting my truant pen, beating myself for spite. Fool, said my muse to me, look in thy heart and write. I don't know what comes through. I don't find that it's so much the point that he's trying to put out. He's trying to elicit this sense of pity. He's desperate. You know, he's desperate now. Whether that's from him, within him or from her, we don't know. But this is with a sense that he really feels. He's so stepped back on the whole idea of engagement that he really feels that. You know, he becomes more attractive as he becomes more pitiful to her, and that she'll love him all the better for that. Let's know, is he that successful? Halting forth, he says, sort of an oxymoron, isn't it? Many of the Elizabethan sonnet writers used oxymorons in their poems. And in this case, the phrase means that he was very close to thinking of the words, but they just wouldn't come out. Halting forth. Could also be interpreted to implying that he was stuttering, halting forth. But the ending couplet leaves us with a statement from one of the muses telling him to just write how he feels. Referring to the muses in the poems is a tradition of Elizabethan sonnets. Did it work? Did it work? This was the age of the Enlightenment, and was preceded by closely with the scientific revolution. Earlier, the philosophers whose work influenced the Enlightenment, Francis Bacon, René Descartes, I mean, nothing to sneer at, and some of the major, when you think about the Enlightenment, César Beccaria, Denis Diderot, David Hume, I mean, let's go to lunch together. Immanuel Kant, Godfrey Helm Leibniz, John Locke, Montesquieu, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, Adam Smith, Hugo, Grotius, Borac, Spinoza, and Voltaire. He was a brother, yeah. Let's go out and do lunch, boys. Let's just, you know, what do you think? Would it be just this overwhelming sense of quiet, like awkwardness, or would it be... Let's have at it. How are you doing? What do you want? It's my round. So, a little something. Now, does that enhance? How could it not? Here, speaking of enhancement, this is something from 1950. Charlie Parker, not exactly known as a pleasant or easy person to be around, and a truly lovable fellow, Coleman Hawkins. This is from an improv they did in 1950. Mm-hmm. Nice work, huh? Nice work. Here, we're going to, I'm going to introduce here the piece on history from Living the Enlightenment, Margaret C. Jacob. We're getting to the end of this work. And I'm looking around for other recommendations that we can go through. We're looking at two prerogatives, a couple of prerogatives of masonry. We've evolved to that point. Our perspective is different where we are in The Hague compared to London. And we're getting a fuller sense of the roundness of masonry, maybe the fluidity of it, because it's adaptive to so many different cultural strains, languages. And of course, we have our own symbolic language that allows us to communicate with each other. At all times, she says, within Freemasonry, authority must descend from the Grand Lodge of a nation, even if the prince is the head of a lodge. And I agree wholeheartedly with it. That's a framework of protection for us. The other prerogative, and here's where she really opens it up, the other prerogative of the legally constituted lodges is liberty. This precious liberty, which the Constitution of the Order renders so admirable, even a monarch would not dare to destroy. That state occurred in a French language almanac in 1776 in the History of Republics. In the same year, the German almanac said that Freemasonry unites men and nations through the holy bonds of virtue, brotherly love, and charity. Nations are enlightened, as it were, unified through humane and social politics. By 1781, in France, spoke of Saint Liberty, the oppressor be called the enemy of the Republic of Masons. In this period, there were even orations praising Voltaire for having seen the truth, for having seen a Republican, which he was not. When dissension and schism occurred within the French Grand Lodge, as was the case in the 1770s, the choice seemed to be between being a republic in which each individual participates equally in power or finding only a despotism. These seemed to be the only alternatives. The solution chosen under the regulations of 1774 proclaimed that the Grand Lodge was only a body formed by the reunion of free representatives of all the lodges. I think that's plausible. And in the autumn of 1789, we find lodges writing openly to the Paris Grand Lodge in favor of the National Assembly and sending money to support its members. They acted, in quotes, as citizens and as Masons. So by no means did all French lodges contribute to or favor the revolution, but all of them would have understood the meaning of being citizens and Masons. At that same moment, another lodge put it well. In the civil order, the deputies of the province represent it to the general assemblies of the nation. It is the same with the lodges. Do you see it? Do you see it? Does it give you a different perspective on your Grand Lodge and your relationship right now? For me, it evoked this sense that I am a Mason, but I'm also a citizen. I'm also a citizen. I'm a citizen struggling to live a virtuous life and understand values and principles that weren't necessary. They were there in the background as I was being brought up, but not pronounced enough as a to satisfy these cravings that come along. It's a good reminder that I do have responsibilities as a citizen as well. And how often have I talked about the priorities in life, not as a ladder, you know, this is on top and this is on the bottom, because my goodness, don't you find that there's more than one priority? You know, and in simplistic terms, you have family and our occupation, and then lodge, and it's like how do you reconcile those? Well, I think the reconciliation comes from what would it be, a calculus? It's a balancing act. And it occurred to me that these priorities don't come and go. They are what they are. They are important. And one of the things we ought to do is realize that, you know, thinking of first and last, it's a mug's game. But trying to achieve balance, that there's something beautiful. There's something beautiful in that. I can't do that for you. You have to achieve that sense of, you know, it's like riding your bike. You learn the balance point, and then you're fine. You drove away standing on your seat and driving and pedaling along at, you know, fearsome speeds with your hands off the handlebars. Beautiful, huh? Just beautiful, clever. And so we balance all those priorities, and I'm not suggesting for a moment there's only three of them. No. There are how many priorities? And some of them are very transitory and, you know, it's a priority in the moment. How do you balance? You always just keep in mind that we are capable of far, far more than we like to admit. Here, does this give you a real sense? This is Jerry Mulligan from an album we've tucked into before, Nightlights, beautiful work. Life happens, doesn't it? Eh? Just happens when you least expect it. We're still moving. We're still flowing along, everything in motion around us. With this joy, you know, we have life. When you get to be an old man like me, and I will get older, I know. But, you know, life is like a photo album. I have these pictures, these stereotypes of things, you know, in all this motion, where I can stop and examine in a little more detail. Yeah, doing that, the rest, things continue to move on all around. But it gives me this sense of satisfaction. Maybe that's a connection with the poet. I think there's some value in learning, being exposed to detail, and having that permeate my thinking in general, that I'm looking for detail. But one thing that I do know is nothing is as it seems. Nothing is as it seems. It's always a backstory, another way of looking at things. I mean, words have some words have two meanings, and thank goodness. If you are hesitant about what's going on in around you, maybe it's that you just need to think about the stars a bit. That masonry isn't necessarily, in a way, we could say it's defined by what you and I make of it. But there's also this bigger context, this much broader universality to masonry, and that I think opens up some real interesting possibilities. The scholarship is scintillating. The refinement of history, the antiquarians are just brilliant. And there are lodges that are just an absolute joy, absolute joy. So are they fretting about lodges that are struggling? Hell no. Hell no. We're getting on with it. We're getting on with it. And we're putting our feet on the ground. It's absolutely a wonderful experience. So to be part of that, you are. You are part of that. Is it happening there? I can't tell. But it's happening here or over there. And you and I are part of all of that. So there's times, you know, it's like Ecclesiastics. And yes, I'm from that kind of a background. There's a time for everything. And there's a time for giving and time for taking. Time for the inner man, time for the external man. I hope you're doing well and you'll continue to commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. And as cheesy as that might sound, at whatever level you are, if you can do something for someone else and they don't know it's you and they enjoy it and it's something that they need, that doesn't get any better. I'll see you in a week's time. Be well.